Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51, we look at the Transform Wisconsin program. $6.6 million in federal grant money coming into our communities to promote healthy lifestyles and local food systems and to discourage smoking. The funds are administered through the Center for Disease Control through money appropriated by the Affordable Care Act, President Obama's health care reform law, with an emphasis on what are being called shovel-ready community coalitions led by local health departments or nonprofit agencies. The grants earmarked for North Central Wisconsin include $460,000 to Marathon County for local food systems and to encourage physical activity and smoke-free apartment complexes. $320,000 is coming to Get Active Wood County in Wisconsin Rapids, much of it to fight obesity. And $160,000 is coming to the Central Rivers Farmshed in Stevens Point for the Greenhouse Project, transforming an urban eyesore, a closed-down garden center, into a food production facility and community gathering place. My guests today are Judy Burrows, Program Director with the Marathon County Health Department, Lane Cozzolino, Executive Director of the Central Rivers Farmshed, and Tony Schultz, a farmer and local food activist from Stony Acres Farm in Athens. As always, we want to hear from you. Does it make sense for the federal government to be encouraging healthy lifestyles and local food systems through these grants? And after all, doesn't that help bring down the cost of health care? Tell us what you think and give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Judy, Tony, and Lane, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
$6.6 million in federal grants to encourage local food systems, fight obesity, fight smoking, and encourage physical activity. Judy, Lane, and Tony, why don't you tell me why this is a good idea? Judy, we'll start with you.
Sure. You know, we know a lot about what we can do in our communities to help change some of the things that we live with every day to make healthy choices easier. And this just provides us an opportunity to put some things in place, to work with a lot of different community partners to make some changes in the community that make healthy choices easy and accessible and convenient.
And Lane is another one of the grant recipients. Why do you think it makes sense to be doing this?
Yeah, I think it's great that Transform Wisconsin came about and that they offer the opportunity for communities to gather together and form coalitions that will better communicate our efforts. Wisconsin right now has $0 in prevention funds, so when you get money from the CDC and you get money from the federal government to do some of these or some of this programming, which is really focused more on systems change, not on individual change, I think that, you know, that's a tremendous power for Wisconsin.
And Tony, you didn't get a grant from this project, but your farm in Athens, Stony Acres Farm, was chosen as the site for the press conference announcing the grants. You're a local farmer. You believe in local food production. To you, why does this make sense?
Well, in terms of everything the grant stands for, I think the two biggest impacts we can have on cancer rates in this country are smoking and diet. And so to lower smoking through education awareness and increased access to facilities that ban smoking is important, and diet. And so this is good federal money to me. Farms like mine that provide local food to local institutions stand to benefit financially from this. And so
how do you respond to people? And I saw a letter to the editor the other day who say that the federal government is broke. We can't afford to be spending money like this on local communities. And they also say it isn't something that should have been appropriated through the Affordable Care Act, the new national health care reform law. How do you respond to the naysayers?
Well, the federal government's spending is a matter of priorities. And so to improve public health, I think, is a very important priority. It's also coming into local economies. And so when this money is spent locally, it can recirculate in the community, and it has something I like to cite often that economists call the multiplier effect. And so there's going to be infrastructure put in place in local schools and local institutions that allow them to make local purchases. I recirculate this money in the community. It's a primer for re-regionalizing our economies, making us more prosperous in the end run.
Go on, Lane. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
I think that multiplier effect is important because also, I mean, the statistics say that a dollar in prevention saves $4 in healthcare costs. And so when you have people, the naysayers, there's those statistics to back up why prevention is so important. And we can't keep putting a Band-Aid on the huge problems that we face.
How are the Transform Wisconsin grants allocated? How did groups apply for them, and how were the winners selected? Judy, maybe you can take that one.
Sure. The application process was actually an online process, and communities were encouraged to apply. There were three focus areas, which you've mentioned: tobacco control, food systems, and then active environments. And communities could apply for one of those priority areas, two, or all three. And in Marathon County, we did apply for all three and we've been funded to focus on all three. And really what the funders were looking for were communities that have already had some success in making some changes to their local areas, mm-hmm. and looking for those communities that had strong local partnerships that were really ready to do more, to make bigger changes, to make a bigger impact.
And that $6.6 million is pretty much spread out all across the state of Wisconsin.
Yes, it is.
The Marathon County got one of six transformation grants, as they call them. As you say, you're focusing on all three areas. $460,000 to work on healthy food systems, active communities, and tobacco-free living. There were six of these counties chosen in Wisconsin out of the 72 counties in the state. Why is Marathon County one of them?
Well, I think we've done a good job at making some headway on all three of these issues. We were one of the counties where we had some municipalities that were working on smoke-free air long before the statewide ban went into place. We've done a lot of education about the dangers of secondhand smoke. Now we're really focusing a lot more on some of the new tobacco products that the tobacco industry has been developing and marketing. What's really concerning to me is some of the candy fruit flavored, candy shaped nicotine containing mm-hmm. things that, we want to keep kids from getting addicted to nicotine because we know the dangers of it. So we have a track record of working with our community partners, working with our community gardens, working with, local food suppliers in trying to increase access to fresh fruits and vegetables. We also have been very active with the bike and pedestrian community and working with our municipal planning organization to create bike routes and safe walking routes. And we want to expand that and start looking more at school playgrounds, other facilities where people can be active year-round.
And there's also a push on your part to develop smoke-free apartment complexes. Talk about that.
That is one of the strategies that is outlined in the grant, and our initiative on that is to work with landlords that have multi-unit housing facilities. So it's not just, the house that somebody is renting out to a friend. Mm-hmm. It's targeted at multi-unit housing facilities. And what we want to do is we want to talk to landlords who are interested in having smoke-free facilities. We want to talk to the renters who are interested in having a smoke-free home. Because we know that in those multiplex units, if one family has a smoker, everybody in the building is being exposed to secondhand smoke. So we want to be the facilitator of bringing those people together and saying, do we want a voluntary policy in place here? So does the landlord want to put something in place and helping people reach agreement on that?
Can landlords ban smoking in apartments right now in their apartment complexes, or do you pretty much have the right to smoke in your own apartment if you want to do that?
They can put that in their lease contract. And, it's interesting because I opened the paper a couple of weeks ago just out of curiosity and was surprised to see how many of the advertisements for rental properties specifically say no smoking allowed. And I was, in fact, encouraged by that.
These were described as the first round of 30 community grants, again, $6.6 million over a 26-month period. They're described as the first round. That implies there might be a second round or a third round. So are more grants in the works here?
It's very possible. The CDC typically grants monies two states in what they call five-year cooperative agreements. And so this being, you know, basically a kind of a two-and-a-half-year agreement, we are anticipating that if the federal funding stays in place, that we would then be again eligible to reapply for a second round of funding. Of course, that's all dependent on many, many, many things. But
what about November elections? What if they repeal the Affordable Care Act, the president's health care reform law? Conceivably, these grants could disappear with it.
That is very possible. This is part of the Affordable Care Act. It is the small percentage of dollars in the Affordable Care Act, my opinion, of course, that is targeted towards prevention. And
well,
so
it is small compared to the total package.
Absolutely, absolutely. That potential does exist. But, you know, from my perspective, that doesn't mean that we let this opportunity pass us by. You know, we've been granted these dollars. We have a work plan in place. We have some things that we want to do, that we aspire to do, and we've got some great community people who are ready to work with us. And so I'll worry about what happens in November.
Now, according to the news release, funds are awarded to shovel-ready community coalitions led by local health departments or nonprofit agencies. What does that mean? What's a shovel-ready community coalition?
Well, I think, you know, the shovel-ready phrase, I think, kind of goes back to, again, some of the other political phrases that have been used. What they're really
looking
at.
Here's the money, and you're going to spend it right now.
Yeah, and, you know, as I read through the application and began writing it, what they were really looking for is communities and groups where, you know, who have already met their partners, who are already working together. You know, we've been working with the farmers market in the past couple of years to increase access there by helping them establish EBT and debit card access. You know, so we know who we need to be working with, and we know mm-hmm. those people. They know us. So that's, I believe, why we're considered shovel ready.
Lane Cozzolino, your group must be shovel ready because you got a grant. One of eight healthy food system grants. Tell us about Central Rivers Farm Shed, first of all,
sure.
for people who don't know about it, and tell us specifically about the greenhouse project.
Great. Central Rivers Farm Shed has been around since 2007. We're a local food nonprofit that does work to help people understand the regionality of their food system and why it's important to know their farmers and know where their
food comes from. And
again,
you're based in Stevens Point.
Yep, we're based in Stevens Point. Tony has actually been a part of Farm Shed, I believe, since the beginning. Mm-hmm. I've been, for the past couple of years, also been an active volunteer. We were volunteer-based until the Greenhouse Project kind of came into fruition, but we had been doing several things. We hold a local food fair every year. We have a beginning farmer course. We also do EBT at our farmers markets in Stevens Point and Wisconsin Rapids. We hold a farmer tribute dinner every year. There's lots and lots of things, and we have our farm-to-school program through AmeriCorps was hosted through Farm Shed. So there were lots of things leading up to this, so we were coalition kind of ready when the Greenhouse Project came about.
And that Greenhouse Project, you've got this is kind of like an urban renewal project in a lot of ways. You've got this old garden center downtown. It's been shuttered, just an eyesore, and you're going to turn it into a kind of a full-service food production facility, greenhouse, and community center.
So, yeah, community food center. And really, it's based in not as much, we will be producing on-site, but more for the education and demonstration practices, rather than we're not trying to compete or impede on our farmers, more trying to invite people into a place that the entire food system is kind of as active in the entire food system. So we have soil components where we're making compost on-site. The compost will be used in the greenhouses. The food will be grown and then used in the kitchen and shown people how to preserve food, how to process food, and then, you know, how to actually cook, which often people aren't doing as much anymore. So it's really a space that's going to reconnect people to their entire food system and why it's so important to understand it and really have a relationship with it.
And Tony, you're a farmer in Athens. Athens is a bit of a haul from Stevens Point. Mm-hmm. Why are you involved in the Central Rivers Farm Shed?
I love to get down there when I can. It is a bit of a haul, but the farm shed is a term that came out of the idea of a watershed, and so it has to do with region and how that interacts with each other. And so we do, you know, have exchange with Point, and the central Wisconsin area is like where I consider that I will sell my food to. And so to develop capacity and consciousness in central Wisconsin for local food is something that I'll work with as many people as I possibly can.
Well, the grants were announced at a news conference last week at Stony Acres Farm in Athens, the outdoor farm setting, of course, a perfect backdrop to emphasize local food systems and farm-to-school programs. Tony, I'm going to play some of your comments at that news conference to sort of set the plate for the rest of the discussion.
Over the course of the last generation, increasingly industrialized food systems and our diets have been betraying us in many ways. Type 2 diabetes, obesity, cancers. Farm-to-school programs offer hope to strengthen children's and communities' knowledge about and attitude toward agriculture, food, nutrition, and the environment. They can increase children's participation in school meal programs, as well as increasing consumption of fruits and vegetables, thereby improving childhood nutrition, reducing hunger, and preventing obesity and obesity-related diseases. In the face of food scares, pink slime, and increasingly processed edible food-like substances that make up a greater majority of our diets, local food, to me, is the most accountable food. I know the people I sell food to as more than customers. These are my friends, neighbors, and fellow community members. I am sending my children to these public schools, and I want them to have the best possible lunches. As a farmer and author Wendell Berry has said, a significant part of the pleasure of eating is in one's accurate consciousness of the lives and world from which food comes. A successful farm-to-school program can raise this consciousness in the minds of our food service workers, educators, and everyone in our community, and give us all more pleasure from our lunch trays. Thanks for coming to the farm today.
Tony Schultz, you say that local food is the most accountable food. What do you mean by that?
It means that I'm not selling a commodity, an anonymous commodity, to an anonymous market that goes to an anonymous consumer. I am selling food that I grow to people that eat it. And so in doing that, the people that eat it are going to make that decision directly about whether I'm giving them something nourishing, healthy, tasty, and they can make that decision locally if there's many more farms locally. And so I have to bear that accountability directly. I can't put it on to an anonymous market where there's increasingly concentrated farms producing an increasingly small proportion of our food supply and causing food outbreaks like salmonella and E. coli spinach, etc. If that would happen for my farm, I'd be out of business immediately.
And you know your customers. You look them right in the eye, and they know you. And if they're not happy with something, they know exactly who to talk to.
And the model that I sell most of my produce through is called community-supported agriculture. I understand the nature of the interdependence of a local economy. My community supports me, provides the reason for me being here, for my livelihood taking place, and I want to honor and strengthen my community so we continue to make everything better for everyone living in that community.
Tony Schultz, he's a farmer in Athens, a local food activist, a member of the Central Rivers Farm Shed, also Lane Cozzolino, who is the executive director of the Central Rivers Farm Shed, the group that's getting $160,000 in a federal grant to help the Greenhouse Project develop a local food production greenhouse in downtown Stevens Point. Also, Judy Burrows of the Marathon County Health Department, whose group is getting $460,000, all in a Transform Wisconsin grant. That's what we're talking about, the Transform Wisconsin grants being administered by the Center for Disease Control through the Affordable Care Act. What do you think? Give us a phone call. Do you buy from local farmers? What about the campaign against smoking? What will it take to get people to stop smoking? Do you even think the government should be involved in this? 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to join the conversation, I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, and we'll be back to talk about local food and growing food locally and consuming it locally when we come back.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning and out in the garden, get your ripe ones, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. summer, all winter without him's a culinary bummer. I forgot all about the sweating and the digging. Every time I go out and pick me a digging. Homegrown tomatoes, what would life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love, homegrown tomatoes.
Support for WPR comes from Northwind Renewable Energy in Stevens Point, partnering with agricultural and commercial industries to invest in central Wisconsin's renewable energy future. More about the benefits of solar for business at northwindre.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're talking about the Transform Wisconsin grants, $6.6 million in federal money to encourage healthy living, to encourage local food production systems, to encourage physical activity, and to discourage things like obesity and smoking. 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation with my guests, Judy Burrows of the Marathon County Health Department, Lane Cozzolino of the Central Rivers Farm Shed, and Tony Schultz, a farmer from Athens who is also involved in the Farm Shed project. And we do have a caller. Let's go right to the phones, and we'll talk to Chester in Athens. Chester, you're on Route 51.
Yes, thank you. I wonder how much bipartisan support we'll have for these programs. It seems that whenever the progressives come up with a great idea, somewhere along the line it's going to be stifled with the conservative agenda. I don't know if I'm on topic here, but if somebody would address whether this is bipartisan or not, and I'll listen off the air.
All right, Chester, thanks so much for the phone call. Who wants to take that?
I can step in for a second, and maybe you'll have something to add. From my perspective, when I think about local food systems, it really comes back to resilient communities. And we have to really start to understand how food is grown around us, and for several reasons. The global food marketplace won't always survive. And so not being in connection to local farmers, or not being in connection to local businesses, and the transportation that comes along with having our food shipped from California. Everyone has to eat, and as things like this drought happen and corn production can't go on, you know, we have to become more realistic in that bipartisanship and what's going to happen as the world changes.
Well, if John McCain or Saxby Chambliss is the most influential Republican on the Ag Committee, he attacked these local food projects kind of last year, and the big federal program, which was great for local food, called the Know Your Farmer program. But if they'd ask me, I'm presenting myself to them as Mr. Small Business, and nobody dislikes small businesses. That's what I am, in essence. I'm a small business, and I'm spending money to stimulate our local economy. And in many ways, local food, first of all, it transcends a lot of divides, because we all eat. And we're talking about local, and we're talking about empowering small agriculture in the face of agribusiness, and that's like my progressive line that I take. But we're also talking about traditional family values, eating together around the dinner table, learning how to cook, making sure that students are involved with school gardens, and so there's a work ethic involved in that, and all those. There's a lot of values you can take from each side of the political aisle when you're talking about local food systems.
Right, and I mean there was a survey done 2 years ago that asked people about farm to school, and in Wisconsin, 81% of people came to support farm to school. The idea that kids are learning about their food system, that they're getting their hands in the dirt, and that they're learning in different ways, new concepts that can open them up to a whole new realm and add to that work ethic that you're
Another little
about.
Point I'd like to make too is that the Buy Fresh, Buy Wisconsin program is something that was put in place by Julie Lassa in the last governor's budget before Governor Walker took office, and it was one of the things that Governor Walker wanted to wipe away. And a lot of conservative blogs have kind of been talking about, should Republicans be in favor of gardening? It seems like the liberals are trying to take that over. And this is something I've seen, actually, but it's kind of ridiculous. And there was pushback from areas all around the state, even like, you know, the Waukeshas and more conservative strongholds. Sorry to be frank about this, but and Governor Walker restored the funding to 85% or 90%, and so that program held up in his very pro, strong Republican Assembly and Senate.
There are a lot of Republican farmers, Republican small farmers who conceivably would want to encourage children to learn about local food production and what it takes to grow things and what it means to buy healthy fruits and vegetables, because that's gonna help everybody's bottom line.
Lane has said kids think carrots come out of a bag in the grocery store. So a lot of my conservative neighbors say the same thing. They like gripe about it, but we're spreading education around. And I said to my conservative neighbors, like, it's another market. You know, it's good for us. Be self-interested.
Right, and there's something about self-reliance, and self-reliance is super important to many conservatives, that we don't have to depend on others. And if we know how to grow food, and if we can save seed, and all of those things are kind of crucial to resilient communities.
And that self-reliance to me means broadening power. And that's what I want. I want broad forms of power, and that's really when I'm talking about food and small farms, I want that power to be broadened, and food is my means to do it.
Well, the funding for this whole program does come from the Affordable Care Act, and that might be a point of controversy. Maureen Busalaki is involved with the Transform Wisconsin program. I'm going to play a clip from that news conference in Stevens Point last week, in which she was talking to reporters about the program.
Where does the money come from?
It comes from the Affordable Care Act. It's the prevention fund. Within the health reform bill that was passed.
Are these grants kind of a one-shot deal, or do you anticipate more grants in the future through the Affordable Care Act? Would those grants be endangered, or would any of this money be endangered if the Affordable Care Act was repealed next year?
Great question. This is a five-year project, so I think there's quite a bit that could happen over the next 5 years. Of course, if they repeal all aspects of the Affordable Care Act, the prevention fund would go away as well. But I would say it would be critically important that we make sure that we keep the prevention fund no matter what they're doing, because we can't afford it otherwise. If we don't do these things, we're not going to be able to afford the health care costs of our Wisconsin communities.
I guess the question is there a possibility that the money would go away if the Affordable Care Act was repealed?
Yeah, I mean, Congress can make that change. Right now, there's a five-year commitment that has been passed. So we hope to keep it that way.
That's Maureen Busalaki of the Transform Wisconsin program, talking to reporters at a news conference at the Stony Acres Farm last week. Now most people, I think, are, if they're listening and haven't been in tune with this, they're probably very surprised to hear that the Affordable Care Act is, for instance, paying for grants for things like a new greenhouse in Stevens Point. In fact, if you told me 2 weeks ago, 2 years ago, when the health care law was passed, that it would be paying for a greenhouse in Stevens Point, I would have looked at you with a little bit of incredulity. So does it make sense for the Affordable Care Act to be used for things like a greenhouse, or an effort to encourage landlords to make their apartment complexes smoke-free in Marathon County? Why does it make sense for the Affordable Care Act to pay for any of this stuff?
Prevention is the best maintenance, and we are encouraging and creating systems that create healthy people and sustain healthy people in the first place, and so we're not reacting to terminal illnesses that continue to increasingly plague our community. That's the short answer.
And Wisconsin spent $1.6 billion on obesity-related health care costs in 2008, and they're scheduled to estimate at $6.7 billion by 2018. So prevention, you know, like I said before, Wisconsin funds $0 toward prevention. So when we're looking at the federal government to help with that, until we do start to fund some prevention programming, you know, and when you talk about the greenhouse project being funded, it's actually a relationship with the school districts. So, you know, they're not doing the capital campaign for us.
Bricks and mortar.
Right. That's still our deal. But what we are doing is building a relationship with teachers, building a relationship with parents, helping them understand why it's so important that their kids, you know, value the food that they're putting in their bodies. And so we're starting by looking at programs that can help them get involved in gardening, can help them, learn math by being in a garden space and planting food and each inch that they have to measure out to figure out what plants need to go where. And so that's what it's really about. It's teaching children from the youngest ages and having that follow through the rest of their lives.
It's also a relatively small amount of food from the Affordable Care Act. And I think as the Affordable Care Act with the exchanges continue to be revealed, You know, it's not a lot of it's not in place. I think it'll become more popular. And even Governor Romney has said many parts of the Affordable Care Act he would keep in place. He passed the same thing in Massachusetts. Also, we need to invest in this because the processed food industry, junk food industry, spend billions. And if you've seen, like, documentaries like Super Size Me, for instance, they spend, you know, it's 20 to 1 in terms of, like, the good PSA that you just had on here in WPR versus the constant advertisements we're seeing for Coke and Pepsi and Doritos and Lay's. And we need to have some means of institutional legitimacy backing us up because we're trying to make people healthier and help and enhance our communities, not profit off of obesity.
Let me play the devil's advocate here. Don't people eat at places like McDonald's because they like the food and the convenience? I mean, there are people who go to McDonald's because they really like Big Macs and they like the French fries. Do you feel sometimes like you're tilting at windmills and trying to get people to change their behavior when they don't see anything wrong with it?
Well, I think the key word there is the convenience factor. I think, you know, when you look at the data and what's happened with chronic disease and obesity in the past 20 years, and you see these rates just continuing to climb and climb and climb and climb, you also have to look at what else has happened in our community. We have engineered so much physical activity out of our life. We don't change the channel by getting up and pushing the button. We use the remote control. You don't shovel your driveway. You get out the snowblower. You don't rake your lawn. You use the leaf blower. You don't. There's so many ways we've taken activity out of our lives. On the food side of it, we don't teach cooking and basic food preparation skills to children anymore. They aren't exposed to where the carrots come from. They aren't out there getting that activity and learning about those things. Our society has changed so much, and I think the real focus of what we're trying to do is put some of those things back in place to make it easier for people so that they can get that activity. They know where their food comes from. We know through research that people that are exposed to and have the opportunity to eat wholesome food as young children and sit down and have a meal with their family and learn about food prep with their family, they grow up into adults that know how to do that, and they will continue to do that. So we're not, you know, going to get rid of McDonald's, but what we need to do is help people understand that there's a better way to do this, and it's an easy way to do it. And we want to make it convenient for them by working with our local farmers and linking people to the local farm so that all the food that they get isn't processed and coming in box with plastic wrappers with instructions to microwave, but something that you can create and feel really good about consuming.
Ordering food from large national companies, though, does have some advantages for public school systems. They know what they're getting. They can be confident that it will be delivered in the right quantities on time. Tony Schultz, are local farmers able to produce food for local schools in a similarly consistent, predictable manner?
Well, in north central Wisconsin, we have one major limiting factor, which is winter. And so that is a large impediment. But there are many gains that can be made. And so there's many things that we can do. And that's what I think learning how to work with food service providers, that's what this grant is going to facilitate. So they can say, you know what, it makes more sense, and it can be cheaper to get bulk potatoes from Anago, where a lot of bulk potatoes are grown, we can have a lower potato cost. If a farmer could do a cull cow, we could have higher quality beef if they would, you know, work with the school to sell it at cost and a local processor would provide that. We could have, and this is something my partner and I have been envisioning and hope to have in place in Athens next year, preservation days. There is no better time to eat locally in Wisconsin than September. There is a glut of produce everywhere.
Right.
It's cheaper to buy it at the farmer's market. It's cheaper to get it locally because it's there.
And it's better. It's
and
fresher.
We can get together, have community events in our schools, facilitated and organized by Farm Shed, and where we can all day and fill up the freezers and coolers with things that we can bring out in the middle of winter, you know, tomato sauce and ratatouille they're doing in Viroqua, for instance, to put on their pizzas in the middle of winter. We can have things that lower the cost to food service providers. I cannot provide lettuce to my school in February at a lower cost. That's true. And I'm not looking to transform the food system entirely that way, but I want to make as many gains as I possibly can.
The greenhouse, Lane Cozzolino, is one way of dealing with that northern Wisconsin winter.
Well, we've had some really great strides as far as even with the renewable energy systems that we're going to have on the greenhouse that could help us do some year-round production, which would be fantastic. The other thing, though, with going back to schools and the commodities, it's really, really hard for regional food systems right now to try to say the local diverse small farmers, even mid-scale farmers, to compete with the commodity pricing. And so I think what's really great is we're going in, we're teaching food service directors how to use fresh produce, you know, and be able to get some from local producers, but having taste tests in schools, I think the education piece has got to happen now while we build momentum and while we, you know, start to examine regional food systems and what our capacities can be. And that includes, you know, still getting into beginning farmers and cultivating them and then starting to look at our transportation and distribution and all of that. So it's much bigger and it's not going to happen tomorrow. But each education piece that we can kind of put in place now and not have just, you know, French fries on the lunch menu. I think that's where farm to school is really, really important.
The more capacity we have, the more possibilities will emerge.
Lane Cozzolino of the Central Rivers Farm Shed, Tony Schultz of Stony Acres Farm in Athens, and Judy Burrows of the Marathon County Health Department. We're talking about the Transform Wisconsin Grants, 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to join us, 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the Transform Wisconsin program with Judy Burrows, Tony Schultz, and Lane Cozzolino. There was a third Central Wisconsin grant that was announced at this news conference last week. Get Active Wood County got $320,000, largely for obesity prevention. Here's Christy Router of the Wood County Health Department at that news conference.
I know that I feel honored and privileged to be here to speak on behalf of Wood County and on behalf of the Health Department and our Get Active initiative. We have been working on chronic disease prevention in Wood County through partnerships with Healthy Lifestyles and Healthy People Wood County's obesity prevention team for a number of years. Our focus around this chronic disease has been to increase access to local fresh fruits and vegetables and to increase access and opportunities to be physically active. We've done this by working to meet people where they're at, working in schools, working in work sites, and with our community as a whole. We've been able to pull together all six of our school districts, Auburndale, Marshfield, Wisconsin Rapids, Pittsville, Port Edwards, and Nakusa, and bring those food service directors to the table to have a shared conversation with us about farm to school. We've also been able to work with these schools on developing school gardens so the kids get to help grow the produce and put it into the food line, as well as working with the greenhouses that these schools currently have.
It's Christy Router of the Wood County Health Department. Lane Cozzolino, comment on the Wood County Farm to School program and their success in getting all of these different school systems on board.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually used to work on that grant before the Farm Shed Greenhouse Project came about, so I have close relationships with them. Sue Anderson has been a real champion. She has also previously worked or was the vice president of Farm Shed, and she has connected with several farmers throughout Wood County as well as Portage County. She's also worked with aggregation out of down south, actually, someone that was bringing up food that was grown in southern Wisconsin. But she trained the food service directors, worked with La Crosse and the Viroqua School District that Tony mentioned earlier, who was doing ratatouille. She brought kind of a champion from the Viroqua School District over. She was a food service director. She brought her over, and they just had this awesome meeting where maybe originally there was kind of this negative, we don't want to do this, I'm not really sure that I'm into cooking with these fresh ingredients. But as they went through it, everybody got really excited, and that built. And now the schools don't want to see it go, and they want to make sure that it's sustained. And so Sue also created another mechanism called Local Alert. So when foods are coming to schools, restaurants have an opportunity to also buy from the farms that are bringing the school's food. So it's really just looking at the capacity and helping people, you know, like Christy said, helping people where they're at, and then getting them to understand how to develop this further.
Judy Burrows, how how are we doing in Marathon County, getting the different school districts on board? Are you working in the same direction?
We are working in the same direction, and actually what has happened in Wood County is something that we'd like to emulate here. We've got some school districts that are interested in doing some community garden, which is a great educational opportunity for kids to be able to see what's happening, you know, how things are growing, how to make things grow. But we also do want to work with those food service directors, and so Christy and I have had conversations about bringing our food service directors together as they did in Wood County and have that same sort of conversation about where can we start. You know, we've talked about this. Our food system being huge and commodity foods and pricing and rebating and all of those things that influence purchasing on a large scale. And we want to have that conversation locally about what can we do? Where can we start? What are the things that we see as doable? Where can we have some small successes and build on it?
Let's go to the phones. We have Paul in Marathon City. Paul, you're on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Hello,
Hello.
Paul.
Hey, I understand why groups like Farm Shed and the Greenhouse Project would get grants like this, but I'm a little concerned about Marathon County and the large amount. I'm a small producer myself, and my experience with trying to make changes that government, rather than being an enabler, is a big roadblock. I mean, I had one project I had in mind, and I talked to a guy, and he actually told me maybe I should move to Oregon if I wasn't happy here. So I'm curious what Marathon County intends to do with that large amount of money.
Judy Burroughs.
Happy to address that. We are one of the communities that is addressing all three priorities, which is not true of some of the other applicants who received lesser money. So what we are trying to do is, and what we will be doing is we are going to be, you know, the facilitators. We aren't going to go out and provide food to schools. We aren't going to be using this money in that way. But what we plan to do is to bring the people together to help them brainstorm. Many times what we hear from our community partners is, you know, gee, I'd like to work on that, but I don't have time to make it all happen. And so what we're going to do is be investing in staff time that can help other people make it all happen.
Paul, do you have a quick follow-up?
Well, I guess my only experience is that government is really good at wasting money rather than conserving it. It seems like the people who are grassroots and have been on budgets all their lives really understand how to make a dollar go a lot farther.
All right. Thanks so much for the phone call. Paul, in Marathon, if you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're talking about the Transform Wisconsin grants. When we come back, we're going to talk about the effort to address what is still a chronic problem in many people's eyes, the problem of smoking and the health effects that are associated with it.
Smoke, smoke, smoke a cigarette. Puff, 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 and if you smoke yourself to death, tell St. Peter at the Golden Gate that you hate to make him weep. You've got to have another cigarette.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, working to build the local economy and strengthen the community by making local business everybody's business. Learn more about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
I'm Glenn Mobrig. You are listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We are talking about the Transform Wisconsin grants, $6.6 million in grants spread out across the state of Wisconsin from the Center for Disease Control. These grants came from the Affordable Care Act, and they are being used to encourage local food systems, discourage obesity, discourage smoking, and to encourage healthy lifestyles. 1-800-780-9742. We may have time to get a quick phone call in before the end of the program. But Judy Burroughs, let's talk about the tobacco-free program in which you're encouraging voluntary smoke-free multi-unit housing availability in Marathon County. How are you going to encourage landlords to make their apartment complexes smoke-free?
Well, we've been trying to meet with landlords, talk with landlords about the benefits of them doing that. And you know, some of these things are very obvious. They have less cleaning costs when they have tenants moving out, new tenants moving in. The risk of fire is a big concern for them. And if there are if they have non-smoking tenants or they don't allow smoking in the building, it greatly reduces the risk of accidental fire that might happen because of tobacco.
Tobacco is a legal product. In fact, it's a farm product that helped produce the American economy in the early days of this country. So it's pretty well entrenched. How do you react when people tell you, I've got a legal right to smoke and you shouldn't be discouraging me from doing it?
Well, tobacco is a legal product, but it's also a deadly product. It causes, it's responsible for, it's the number one killer in our country still, despite all of our conversation about obesity and obesity being a very, very close second. Tobacco is still the number one cause of preventable death and disability, and we can't ignore that. We've made great strides in this state with the smoke-free air law. People at first weren't all in favor of that.
Well, but I remember doing a show about that, you know, a few years ago and getting a lot of angry phone calls. But, you know, we've outlawed smoking in bars and restaurants and many public places, even outdoor places like ballparks and outdoor concerts. And now we're talking about rules against smoking in apartment buildings. Where should people be allowed to smoke, and don't they have the right to smoke in their own home? And if you're not wealthy enough to own your own house, well, that means you live in an apartment.
Well, individuals do have the right to smoke, but they don't necessarily have the right to expose other people to their secondhand smoke, and that's really what we're trying to get at. And you're right, not everybody has the ability to afford their own home, and so if you can't afford your own home, then your option is to rent. So if you can't afford your own home, you shouldn't have to breathe secondhand smoke. And that's what we're working on, is trying to make more places smoke-free so people don't have to be exposed.
I'm not with the health department, but can I just throw in my two cents on this? Now, it's not about an individual's right to smoke or not. It's about, to me, it's about the institutional power of Philip Morris's power to get people to smoke cigarettes in the first place, and the manipulative psychological ad campaigns that are often directed at children and entrench this deadly habit in them at a young age and create a culture around it that people defend as a matter of their personal pride. They got that idea from a company who wants to profit from lung cancer. And that's that institutional power that needs to be attacked and attacked vigorously. And people who smoke need to know that the people who have been promoting their smoking do not have their best interests in mind. They have a profit motive in mind. That's what needs to be said to people. It's not about your individual right to do what you want, but you're defending Philip Morris.
You know, but things have changed a whole lot during our lifetimes. When I was a young man in the 60s, you could get a pack of cigarettes from the vending machine at the Burger King for 35 cents. You know, that's what it costs. Now cigarettes are, you know, in some urban areas are pushing $10 a package. It's amazing that anybody, you know, particularly people on a limited income can afford them.
And I think that really shows the power of that addiction. Because, you know, people that don't have a lot of money that, you know, are making tough choices about how they spend that $10 are buying cigarettes over paying their rent, feeding their children, providing education to themselves or family. It's a very powerful addiction, and it's something that, you know, we want to see the smoking rate, the tobacco use rate reduced.
I believe in education, too. Education, education, education. That's where this grant is focused. That's where my hope for it comes from.
Let's talk about the greenhouse project in the last couple of minutes that we've got. When is it going to be completed, Lane Cozzolino?
Ooh, that's a tough question. So what is exciting is we've been working on it. It was actually last week that we went in there a year ago to start the community conversation again. We got our keys in October, and so we've been working since then. A lot of it was capacity building, and now I feel like we've made lots of strides, and we're excited for not only the university students to come back because they all wanted to be so involved, but we have money from the city of Stevens Point to start renovation. We've had it for a little while, but the plans and intricacies of that building have been something that we've had to learn.
Let me rephrase it. If everything goes perfectly, mm-hmm. when is that greenhouse going to be open as a community center?
Phase one, hopefully by winter.
that quickly?
Mm-hmm.
That quickly. Well, good luck with that.
Yeah, thank you.
In the news release on the Transform Wisconsin project, it said, quote, all Wisconsin families and children deserve access to improved health, smoke-free air, fresh fruits and vegetables, and places to play, and it should not be out of reach for anyone in Wisconsin. Judy Burrows, you want to give a quick comment on that?
Sure.
We're just about out of time.
You know, those are the basic things that, you know, when we talk about risk factors that cause disease, you know, if we have these things in place, we can grow healthy children, we can grow healthy communities, we can make, you know, our central Wisconsin area a very desirable place to live, work, and do business.
We want to thank today's guests, Judy Burrows, Program Director with the Marathon County Health Department, Lane Cozzolino, Executive Director of the Central Rivers Farm Shed, and Tony Schultz, a farmer and local food activist from Stony Acres Farm in Athens. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Crystal Waters. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Tom T. Hall, Tex Williams, and Peter, Paul, and Mary. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, until next week, we're heading out of town. And